Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. What episode number is this, Sean? I already forgot.
48.
48. All right, we're coming up there. Like you said, it's coming up on 50.
It's double my age.
Really?
Well.
I think you're stretching it, Sean.
Well.
So this was a pretty cool podcast. This one is sort of the last podcast of the THU podcast that I did. And it's with Scott Ross again, who has now been on the podcast 3 times. And Alan Baldwin, who also joins us, who is really cool. And you'll find out that Alan and I figured out that we actually know each other. We didn't realize it. One of those small world situations. But Scott and I get into a lot of stuff, talk about the industry as we like to do. It's really just an opportunity for people to sit down and sort of hang out with us. We talk about THU quite a bit. And you'll see at the end of the podcast, a spoiler alert, Scott starts talking about the fact that there's a good chance that, or there was a chance that THU won't happen again. Andre is really, really tired and he's running out of money because THU is, he's losing money on every year. Now Scott's really trying to change that. And since this podcast was recorded, a lot has changed and Scott and Andre have sort of been pushing forward with a bunch of different initiatives to sort of make THU happen again. And it's going pretty well. And I think at this point, the tides have changed, and which makes me really happy because THU is so, so important to the community. And one of the best things you can do if you want to be able to help THU and be part of it is to get THU TV. THU TV is actually pretty cool. It's got... It's like 100 hours of content, right,
Sean? Over 100 hours.
Yeah, and they're continuing to add stuff to it. So it's got a lot of stuff. So if you want to basically see, if you want to see the talks that happen at THU and why people say this is one of the best events in the year, you can see that. But on top of that, they also recorded a whole bunch of shows that I didn't even know about while THU was going on. So additional things. So let me just name off some of the shows that I had, which is going to be at, which is also as part of THU TV. There's a show called Jumpstart, which is really cool. There's an amazing show called Sketchbook, which is, you know, famous artists' sketchbooks and just sort of looking at their sketchbooks and understanding what they do in it, which is really beautiful.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another one called The Gig Economy, which is how to get a gig.
Oh. That's important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Really good stuff. There's one called War Stories, which Scott talks to old school VFX guys about their old war stories.
Nice.
And then there's another one called the New Kids on the Block, which are all the new up and coming artists and stuff like that. So really, really great. It is $199 to get it. Now to get it, you'll have to go to Vimeo.com and you can go Vimeo.com/on-demand/THU2015, or you can just look up THU2015 on Vimeo and you'll be able to see it there. But we are offering a special discount, right, Sean?
We are.
So what do we? Or what do people need to do to get that discount?
They enter the promo code. Here it is.
Yes.
It's THU-CHAOS. That's CHAOS 33.
Perfect. And so they'll get a 33% discount on it. So yes. It's even better deal. Really, it's to me, it's a no-brainer. The more that Scott and Andre were talking, they think that this is the best way they can reach out to the greater community. And I think it's a really great thing that you guys can do. So you can do it in order to support THU, or you can do it just because it's really awesome content. And I think it'd be really great. So please go ahead and do that. We'll have links up on the lab's website for you guys, and we'll put it up on social again to help promote it. But this is the best thing that you can do to help make the community of THU grow. And it would be really, really cool to do that. All right. That being said, hopefully you guys will enjoy this podcast as much as I did, and love and peace to everyone. All right. Bye.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, You need to make sure everything has Fernell.
All right, Scott, here we are again.
Here we are again. Here we go again.
Here we go. You know, it was funny. I was telling someone that I was at the beach, and I ran into someone who saw last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at me and gives me a hug and says, "Welcome home."
Yeah.
It's a weird, and it's a lot of people have gone to, with Ian Fales from FX Guide. And he's mm-hmm. like, "I've never seen anything like this. Yeah. This is unbelievable." So it's a really amazing thing that has come together here. And mm-hmm. I know Andre is an amazing person, but I know you have a lot to do with it. You have a lot of ways of making sure that people are aware of this that's going on.
Over the last couple of years, I recently became a grandfather.
Yeah.
And so, what I am is I'm the grandfather of THU, which is all of the fun and a lot of and a bit of direction,
mm-hmm.
And none of the responsibility, which is that's the greatest part about being a grandparent. Right,
you get to play with the can kids and give them to
work. Right, and you can feed them sugar and stuff, and here you go, and then you give it back to the parents, and in a way you wink when you give it back to your kid, and it's like, see, payback. Yeah, karma's a bitch.
Yeah.
So that's the role I play. I do the fun stuff here.
Yeah.
Andre does the fun stuff and all of the other work, and all of the work, actually. So the role that I play with Andre is I'm sort of a strategic advisor, a person that he gets to bounce ideas off and concepts and the like. And hopefully I inspire him and, give him good feedback. And then I also arrange for all of the big name speakers because they're people out of my Rolodex, right?
So, mm-hmm.
and then the rest is all Andre and his team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is really, really cool. It was interesting. I was, I did a podcast with Tim Miller just recently, and he's an interesting character. I really love his history and the way he thinks, and he's very honest about everything. And after that, I said, "Oh yeah, I'm leaving this week to go to Trojan Horse was a Unicorn." He goes, "What is that?" And he was just like, his eyes opened up, and I started explaining to him, and he said, "That sounds amazing." So he was really, really intrigued by the idea of what THU was about.
Well, we've said it a bunch, but it's the most important part, or I wouldn't say the most, one of the most critical parts of the world's culture, of global culture,
mm-hmm.
is driven by men and women that are digital artists. I mean, it's become the renaissance of digital arts.
All culture is defined through art in mm-hmm. a lot of ways, and that's the thing. When you're going to get some culture, you're going to a museum and you're looking at art, and you understand history is remembered a lot through art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not valued enough
mm-hmm.
for present day artists aren't valued enough. They only value them after they're dead or, mm-hmm. A few centuries later or whatever, but they don't value what artists can deliver.
But as a cultural force, it's like, if we go back to the Paris in the 1920s, we say, well, art was really, really critical and moved the needle on world sensibility and thinking and philosophy and whatnot. But there were only really a handful mm-hmm. of folks that were involved in that milieu at the time, right? Mm-hmm. But nowadays, it's a global community, mm-hmm. number one. And number two, because of digital technology and computer technology, it's so pervasive in every form, walk of life, whether it's corporate or whether it's communications and media, whether it's true fine art,
mm-hmm.
the digital artistry is really, really critical to, developing, defining, and representing the culture, but on a giant scale, right?
Right.
And what we have is that a lot of the, as we'll call them, digital artists are secondary and tertiary artists. They're not necessarily primary artists. So they're the workforce that takes the ideas and concepts and images of maybe the primary creative folk.
Yes.
And then creates them in such a way that it has an impact on society. And so there are so many men and women that are doing that now and growing mm-hmm. by leaps and bounds every year as digital technology becomes more pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's without those men and women, all of the things that, or many of the things that the world enjoys in terms of entertainment and culture wouldn't exist.
Right.
Right. Unfortunately, there has been no society, no grouping, no coming together, no community besides maybe the internet. You know, the internet provides somewhat of a very loose community, but there are a lot of, I think, men and women that are creating this work that feel disenfranchised. They don't feel like anybody understands them. I don't think they feel like they're paid right. They don't feel like they're supported in the right way, etc. And so THU is a result of a place to go where these artists feel valued, they feel heard, and if nothing more, that like we're not trying to get anything done, mm-hmm. except to make us all feel like we're a family and we're important to one another. And Andre's done that in spades.
I think what's really also important is the sense that he puts on everyone, where there is no VIP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So yeah, everyone sees each other. Anyone can walk up to you and talk to you. Anyone can walk up to anyone and talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. And everyone feels welcome and everyone becomes friends. Mm-hmm. The amount of friends that I made from last year is amazing. And, you know, there was no sense of hierarchy, like you said, and which allows for the community to come together. Now, what I also think is really cool, and this is something that Andrew Hickabottom talked about earlier, is that he, because of the internet, right, he knows a lot of these people either through checking out their galleries or maybe they've communicated a little bit here and there. But a place like this allows him to actually make a connection to that person.
Right.
And that happens all the time, where he is, you know, really talked to people and got to know people. And he's a really cool guy, you know, but I can sense it. He feels a little isolated, you know.
I think generally speaking, the folks that are comfortable with technology are isolating in and of themselves. So it actually, THU greases that possibility to be able to interrelate with one another.
Right.
You know, there's a good reason why Andre chose Troia, Portugal. There's nothing to do here except for commune with beautiful nature and be together. Right. It's not like, you know, you have SIGGRAPH in Vancouver or SIGGRAPH in Los Angeles or mm-hmm. even FMX in Stuttgart. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a city around you. There are museums. There are places to go. There are things to do. Here, it's us, right? Yeah. So it's
we are the museum.
Yeah, we are the community that stays together, and you're with each other 24/7.
But the talks are also geared in a way that they're not necessarily a long technical discussion about something, right? The talks are inspirational. The talks are about the person, right? It's not always about a company. It's about this person that happens to work at a specific company, and that person may be happy and love to talk about how he loves the company, but it's about the person. So people get to share that experience very personally. And what I loved yesterday at the talks we had yesterday for the screening is that the audience immediately, specifically because there are probably a lot of veterans, immediately felt like asking questions, like, you know, like you said, like we were in a family room, you know, and basically there's 600 people in a room and they're all looking at you and they want to talk to you.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, well, first of all, he curates that. I think the whole THU staff is very, very aware of it. And curious, it's also like his mission statement, right? There are no VIPs. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to FMX. You know, a lot of the conferences are great. I mean, FMX is great.
It's
great, you know? And so you go to FMX, it's very well done. They have great people there. And they have on the fifth floor of the Film Academy building, the place where all the VIPs hang out,
mm-hmm.
right? And so when one is a VIP, what you do is you go to there. They have free food there and free coffee there, and so you gravitate. You climb the five flights of steps,
right.
and you go into that green room, mm-hmm. and you sit there and you wait for other things. And you're not downstairs with the peeps, you know.
Right.
And as a result, it's actually separation of, you know, God and church. You mm-hmm. know, it's sort of like, if you want to pray, you have to pray through me,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the biggest problems with religion. You know? It's like, wait a second, so Andre and the staff here, myself included, are very, very conscious of making sure that we're all together, we're all talking, and that part of it is a technical, you know, sort of presentation of, you know, how somebody did something on the Game of Thrones,
mm-hmm.
but just as important as, so you're the visual effects supervisor on the Game of Thrones. How did you get here? What are the problems you face? Mm-hmm. In the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning when you wake up in a cold sweat, what are you thinking? Mm-hmm. Where did you study? What's your inspiration? So it's a psychological, spiritual, technical conference, and that's why we call it Burning Man Meets TED.
Right.
And you know, you get to see who you really are and who other people really are.
Right.
At the same time, get great insight into sort of the best and the brightest of what's happening in our industry.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think it really is sort of, that's exactly what the talks are feel like. And every single one, you know, Gina and I were here last year, as you remember, and yeah. we stocked our thing. We went to every single talk. We didn't skip anything. And we just couldn't wait to see the next one. And
you made a comment. I heard, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, in passing, and I heard you say, well, the last year I was here, I cried several times.
Yeah. Right?
And that made me really feel good. It sort of made my heart full because that's one of the efforts of what we're all trying to do. We're right. all trying to get people to connect to the humanity of it all, of who we are and why we're here and what yeah. that's all about.
Yeah, so. I don't think, you know, and like you said, all the lot of those conferences have their place. And SIGGRAPH, as an example, is an amazing conference, and it delivered this year some of the best papers I've ever seen. But you're not going to cry when you go see a presentation on right. a paper, you know? And I
cry on the registration line at SIGGRAPH just trying to get my credentials.
All right. Well, let me see. What are some of the other cool things that you've been doing?
I moved to Santa Barbara.
Hey.
And, you know, that was a big effort moving out of Venice. Alan Bolden,
Alan.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
How are you, Alan?
I'm doing great.
I have a seat.
Well, thank you very much. Just walking right in.
Yeah.
So one of the things, you know, I'm glad Alan joined us. Let me give you sort of a precursor to why Alan's here to an extent.
Let me fix this microphone. Hold on a second. Go ahead and ask him his question. I'll fix it.
Okay. Over a period of time, you know, the last 2 years, Andre and I have been pulling out our hair, trying to figure out how we're able to pull this off on a financial budget level. And on one hand, what we didn't ever want to do is we never wanted to become in a way like SIGGRAPH, where you have this whole event of every person in the world that has any corporation, from Microsoft to Chuchi Puchik Video Company mm-hmm. has a booth on the floor of SIGGRAPH and they're trying to sell you their goods and whatnot. So, mm-hmm. you know, SIGGRAPH is broken into basically three different events. There's the floor event where they're trying to sell you crap. There's the papers event where they're trying to teach you stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's the party event where everybody kicks out the jams, right?
Right.
And so what we didn't want to do here at THU was A, get too big, and B, we didn't want to really have it feel like a corporate event. But on the other hand, given limiting the number of attendees that mm-hmm. we have to do to make it really personal, mm-hmm. And not being able to charge what we would need to charge to actually pull off the event that we want to pull off and mm-hmm. you know, break even, we needed to bring in corporate sponsors. So Alan and I have known each other for a number of years as a software guy and a visual effects guy and mm-hmm. and whatnot. And, you know, we've shared alcohol and fun and, yeah. and parties.
Lots
of alcohol. And Alan does strategic work and is sort of a spokesperson guru guy yeah. for Lenovo.
Yeah.
So we started to talk and Alan said, you know, maybe we could bring Lenovo in. So mm-hmm. this year we have like a handful of sponsors, mm-hmm. Lenovo being the key sponsor. Mm-hmm. Lenovo's interest is, you know, we make really kick-ass computers.
Right.
And the computers that we make, we feel are appropriately designed and developed for media and entertainment. Mm-hmm. He's sort of the media and entertainment
oh,
guru
cool.
at Lenovo. And so Lenovo's here. So they really helped us a lot, A, financially, B, from a point of view of you know, bringing us equipment and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we really were careful in selecting who the people are. And like your company, for mm-hmm. example, yeah. is, you know, another extension of that, the relationship that we have with you guys.
Right.
We never feel like we're trying to be sold something or no. that we're selling something out in the field.
No, it was very interesting because it was Gina and I sort of knew that last year when we came here. We came here as attendees. Uh-huh. It was a reconnaissance mission, right? We were basically going in saying, you should check it out. This seems like a very interesting event because we do a lot of events.
Right,
you know, at some point, I think at one point we were doing 80 events a year.
Oh, wow.
And so it was too much in a lot of cases, but we wanted to check out what was going on. We knew that this was something a little bit different. And we looked here and it's like, sponsoring this is not the same way that you sponsor other things.
Right.
You're not making in a booth. You're not giving presentations. You're not demoing your software or your hardware or whatever. You are there. The most of the people here, they know V-Ray. I don't need to show them V-Ray, you know, but what I need to show them is I need to show them that we're here, we're listening to them, and we're part of them, and we're part of their attention, and we love it, and we want to make sure that we sponsor things like this.
But V-Ray, and now I think now Lenovo is sort of coming to grips with it now. It's a much bigger company in many ways than V-Ray.
Yeah.
But from your perspective on the V-Ray side, you grok that totally, right? And so... by your being here and building relationships with some of the world's greatest artists in the world,
right.
It's helping you, but it's not product placement.
No.
Right?
No.
That's right. And Lenovo is getting that, you know, it's yeah. like they're still sort of like, can we, and I'll oh, hold on guys, you know, yeah. and it's really rare to find companies like yours and now Lenovo who has that sensibility and is willing to take the risk. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I talked to several other companies that are, and these guys were all about, well, what's my booth space? And will my people be able to give a lecture? And will be, you know,
right?
They don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was really, really cool. And the fact is, you know, people know we're here because they see us and they relate to us, and we are a person and we're a face. That's you know
it.
What I mean?
That's it.
And we're not a company.
It's actually bigger than that. It's not that you're a person and a face. You're actually a member of the community.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like they're not even looking at you as being, oh, you're the V-Ray guy and it's nice that you're here. You're Chris.
Yeah.
And exactly. We love you. And yeah. Let's have a drink.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a very different approach. And I think a much more legitimate and authentic approach to marketing as opposed to what corporate America does.
Sure.
I think so, yeah. If it's not organic, it's not really, it's not real, right?
Right.
So and the fact that you came as attendees first, I think it speaks volumes because you're very interested in what goes on here. So
yeah.
that's.
But we immediately, you even though we were just attendees, we immediately like bonded with everyone. We weren't yeah. just sitting in the sidelines as observers, right? Mm-hmm. We organically became part of the organism.
Yeah.
Well, I think that says a lot about who you guys are.
Well, yes. Right? I mean, I know. I'm not shy.
That's right. And in fact, where you came from, like Alan and you sort of similarly come from the artist background sensibility. Sure. So your genetic DNA makeup is very, very similar, if not exactly similar
right.
to the men and women that are here, as opposed to, you know, somebody like the IBM Corporation comes in and plops down. They might not understand what we're trying to do here.
Sure.
You guys intuitively get it.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. So where did you come from? You look so familiar to me.
We probably met at like SIGGRAPH or something. I don't know if it's been a whirlwind, but I've been working on a couple of different things for the past 10 years, basically a lot of artificial intelligence constructs where if you would type something into the construct.
Wait a minute, we met at GTC.
Yeah, GTC was where we met.
That's
was it.
Right.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
That's it.
You were working on that, what was it called?
It was a Athena.
Athena yeah. project.
Yeah.
Yes.
And things went very successfully.
Awesome.
So now we're creating a portion of Athena for the public to use for free.
Oh.
And that's where we were talking about.
Okay. I should tell this ancestor. Yeah. We've been trying to meet for Ida for a long time.
Yeah.
And so we've been trying to figure out, like, oh, can I do this? And it's just like, the schedules are we're just conflicting. And then one day, I had to, Lon, I don't know if you met Lon, but anyway, Lon wanted to, he just got married, and the owner of the company want to surprise him with some kind of a gift, mm-hmm. you know? And he basically, we arranged this thing where he'd fly him out to Catalina for the weekend and have an all paid, like sort of mini little honeymoon because they didn't get the chance to do as much on their honeymoon or whatever. But he wanted to give him this little gift, right? And so he wanted it to be a surprise. So we had to figure out how to get him. I had to figure out how am I going to convince Lon that he has to go to Long Beach on a Friday afternoon. And so we constructed this whole fake story. And I had like, I had it, so we had this meeting, and he's like, yep, okay, that'd be great, we'll meet then. And Lon's like, God damn it.
I have to go to Long Beach.
Who the hell sets up a meeting on a Friday afternoon in Long Beach? Jesus Christ. It's like, well, you know, it's like, and then, and he says, well, there's another, and then he made a name of some other company.
Yeah.
To say, then we're going to meet in San Diego Saturday morning. He's like, well, I might as well stay in Long Beach, which we had to do in order to convince him to bring a change of clothes.
Right.
So it was this whole constructed set. So Alan was all in on it. And it was like really funny.
It was so funny. He calls me. He's like, so I'd love to have a meeting with you, but it's going to be completely fake. These guys, after that, I'm like, I'm in.
I've done that meeting before.
So yeah, it was really funny, the whole, how that all happened. I was like, I know you have that. It's like, of course, Alan, yes. I remember. So yeah, tell me about, can I ask you about the
sure.
the artificial intelligence project?
Sure.
Yeah. Explain exactly what it was, because it was really kind of a beautiful idea.
It's great. We just want people to be able to create stories in a, just a much easier way. People who are novice, people mm-hmm. who are experienced, that have a chance to create assets faster. But the whole point was to, we like to call it textual input equals visual output, or TEV, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you type something out, a description, like the ball falls off of the table. And in real time, that table gets created, that ball gets created in CG. The CG is, you know, a decent quality. I would say somewhere around what you'd see for like Toy Story 2 to 3, you know, okay. depending on what's going on. And it's generated in real time. And so for the general public, we're creating a different platform called EchoType. That runs over a HTML5 browser.
So does it basically use some kind of a machine learning thing? Or?
It's definitely machine learning.
Okay.
It's machine learning, and it...
Are you using deep network or whatever that's...
Deep learning used to be called prime intelligence. I'm not sure when it when it all changed from when I was in school, but it uses deep learning, right?
Yeah.
What do they call it now? It doesn't really matter.
Oh, it's machine learning. Deep networks or neural.
It's definitely a part of a neural network. What we do is we use an algorithm that basically works off of kind of like a quantum mechanical. So basically, instead of calculating one instance, then another instance, then another right. instance,
yeah.
we do all those instances in the same.
Which is why the GPU. Part of it works really well
exactly.
because it can multi-thread so well.
And that's what we're really, I mean, the GPU part of it is, I know geek speak, right? But it's so cool because right now,
I'm checking my email.
What it translates to though, I mean, from the GPU level to even, you know, visual when we're using engines like yours.
Yeah.
It translates to people being able to say, I have an idea in my head. And I can use the words to get those ideas out if I don't know, you know, how to use all these different packages.
Right.
And hopefully it creates a relationship where you're learning more about your prose and your English and writing mm-hmm. as well as at the same time you're really just interested in creating your art.
Yeah.
And that's what we love about it. So we finally finished the engine for EchoType on the web, and
that's cool.
Debuted it at SIGGRAPH, and wow, you know.
On this podcast, would I be able to put a link on there to show?
I can give you a link. Yeah, we're currently in beta. We found out that so many people were going on that they were killing our servers.
Okay.
So we have a released beta where we just release in waves.
Okay.
I'll give you the key.
Okay. Well, that'd be great because I'd love to be able to at least give people information on how they can get on the beta if they want to try things out.
Fantastic.
Or see things.
Thank you.
So that would be great. Well, that's cool. I'm so glad you're here. That's so weird.
Yeah.
Small world. Yeah. No, well, it's a very small industry.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. The really scary part.
Yeah.
Is that you couldn't put it together for about 2 minutes.
Yeah. That's
the scary, really scary part. Yeah. Didn't I spend like a day with you? Weren't you like my best friend in sixth grade?
It's like all a blur, you know, between all the cocktails and then like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny. Really fun. Yeah, I ran into David Prescott today and chatting, and he's going to be on the podcast too, which is exciting. So I'm excited. I've been waiting for this all year, to be honest. And I got on the boat, and a lot of people said that. They got on the boat, they feel like they never left.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
So.
This is his first.
This is my first year.
He's a virgin.
Yeah. And I'm already amazed.
When did you get here?
Yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. Yesterday.
Through trials and tribulations.
Did you see that? Did he go to the, yeah. the sandcastle competition?
No.
No, he got here later. No, you didn't get here later. There's a sandcastle competition at about 3 o'clock, was it?
Yeah.
Yesterday? And it was.
I was one of the judges. It was awesome.
People on the beach making sandcastles and playing in the sand.
Oh my gosh.
They had a three hours to make a big ass sandcastle.
Are you serious? Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be, guys.
There were what, eight separate submissions?
There were seven submissions and then two rogue submissions.
Whoa.
Because basically what they did is they had the knights, the speakers, right?
Yeah.
And they would pick one knight and then they would randomly pick five attendees to be part of that knight's team. So each, there were all these packs, and then there was a bunch of people who basically didn't have a team. It's like, screw it, we'll make our own team and make our own castle. So it was pretty good. We gave an honorable mention to one of the rogue teams, because everyone had this, you know, the theme was supposed to be a seahorse unicorn, right? So they made a bunch of interpretations of it and were pretty cool. But then the rogue teams are like,
screw that,
we're just going complete silliness. And then some one guy made like a unicorn, but you know, put a gigantic penis on him or whatever. and then the other guys just decided they carved themselves out a lounge. Like they dig
like
out
a bench,
like a bit, like a sofa, like a big old sofa hanging out by the beach, and they're like places for their beers and stuff, and they decorated it, and it was awesome.
I like it.
It was awesome.
I like it. Yeah. Okay, this is automatically my favorite right now.
Well, it's only just begun.
Yeah, oh, yeah, man. Yeah. It goes on all
night. So I had a real sort of epiphany this year. I was talking before that I get to be the grandpa, right? Mm-hmm. So I get all the fun and none of the work. So I get to choose the speakers, mm. right? That's what I get. Not the knights, you know, that sort of, what's lovely about the knights thing is that many of the knights are basically the same knights that come back year after year because nice. They're part of the family, right?
Right.
It's hard. I mean, you would think like, well, let's have like 30 new knights this year, but actually, you know, many of the knights, I'd say maybe 70% are return people because they're just part of the family. You have to do it, right? Which is lovely. But I get to pick the what's called the legends, right? Mm. So the people that are you know, will come for the event and stuff. And so this year, Andre, one of the things about Andre is he has no knowledge of what cannot be done.
Nice.
So he just assumes, well, you could do that. Right. So he'll say things like this year, because we need support, we have financial issues, we need support from the Portuguese government.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, the only way to get support, like 2 years ago, a year ago, we need support from the Portuguese government. And so the only way to get real support of the Portuguese government is we need an Academy Award winner or Academy Award winners. So I wind up getting a couple Academy Award winners, no support from the Portuguese government.
Mm.
Right. So this year he was like, well, we need superstars. So I said, you know, it's going to be tough. You know, it's like the superstars are generally busy, busy people. Now, I said, I think we could do superstars like in the visual effects world. Mm-hmm. Like I could probably or maybe get like Richard Taylor or maybe Dennis Muren or Kenny Ralston or somebody like that.
Yeah.
He's no. We need superstars. I said, okay,
who? Like George Lucas?
Well, he didn't go there because he knew in my relationship with George that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't ask me, though I did put it together with Jim finally, Cameron. But he didn't ask for me to go get Jim Cameron. But the list was like Miyazaki, David Fincher, Guillermo del Toro, Stan Lee, J.J. Abrams, Brad Bird, John Lasseter. You know, sort of the superstars in the industry, but not, you know, Spielberg. Cameron Lucas. And the interesting thing was we got responses from every single one.
Right.
So everybody I contacted, either they called me or wrote a personal note back. And their responses were almost all the same, which was, if I had the time to do it, I would do it.
Yeah. Right.
But
I'm
in post on Star Wars,
right.
Or I'm shooting a new movie in China, or, you know, Stan Lee was like, I'm 90 some odd years old. I'd love to come, but I'm not going to fly for 15 hours.
Right.
I said, well, you know, Sid Mead did it. He's a youngster. He's 82.
Right.
You know? So we had these responses and we were getting nowhere. Right. And then I had a flip, and the flip was that instead of getting people that are about the things that they've done, I wanted to get people all who've done some extraordinary things, but actually approach creativity from a soulful point of view, as opposed to, you know, I made Star Wars and I made Star Trek in the same year. And J.J. Abrams is amazing. And he said the same thing. I'd love to come. I'm just too busy.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I started to look for people that speak about creativity and taking risks. And so the group that I got here, you know, Norman Steeve is a very, very famous guy, but not necessarily in our field, right? He's a photographer.
Yeah.
But his entire presentation is about risk-taking and creativity, and not about, I use this camera and this lens and this software and this, you know, it will all be about that. So I'm really excited about that to see how that goes and how it resonates with the tribe.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about it. And, you know, the other thing is Kevin Mack being here, because I love Kevin.
Yeah.
I'm not going to reveal the story because I'm going to save it for him when I see him. But basically, Kevin was unbelievably influential in my career. I don't think he knows how.
When you were at Digital Domain?
No, when I was at Sony. And I asked to go out to lunch with him, and he just gave me some advice that completely changed everything. And I don't think he knows that. And I don't think he realizes what he's done for me. So I really appreciate what he did. And he's such a funny guy.
Well, the thing about Kevin is, not, you know, and I chose Kevin too. He was an Academy Award winner, but he gave up his career.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really a fine artist now. That's what he does, right?
Yeah.
And so to have somebody, you know, walk away with an Oscar on What Dreams May Come and then move to Sony and then say, you know, this is really not who I am. I want to do something totally different. And the risk, and his wife is here, Martha's here as well.
Yeah.
Those are the stories I want to be told. You know, I think that'll be fun.
Yeah. He's such an awesome person. I mean, you know, if anyone who's a VFX supervisor who comes to your desk to do walkthroughs by strumming a guitar and serenading to you is one of the sweetest guys. And he's really smart too, on top of being too so goofy and everything else that he loves to do, and everyone is totally entertained by him.
Right.
The other thing I really appreciate about him, every time you go to a review, like let's say they had, you know, reviews where you'd go to the screening room or the small review area, and he'd look at shots all day long and stuff. And every time someone would come in and he'd present their shot, every time he goes, thank you so much for this.
No
matter what. And he'd just make you feel appreciated. Even he might have torn your shot apart, but he's like, thank you so much for doing this. This is great. I can't wait to see the next version.
Well, he also came, you know, he started as a set painter.
I know.
You know
who I've heard story about him is from Gray Marshall. Do you remember? Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know Gray.
So Gray, I worked with Gray I did the opening sequence to the movie 21 when I was at Sway, and Gray was the overall VFX supervisor, so he came by. I ran into him the other day. It's funny. But anyway, he was telling me stories about Kevin Mack, because Greg has a motion control background, right? And he was, I guess, right after Eric Nash was doing motion control, because I did a podcast with Eric Nash too. And so he was talking about how basically Kevin would walk in and he would just, you know, it's like, all right, I need a galaxy right here. And he would just go under the sheet and put the mask on and just whoosh, whoosh, and then like, boom, there's your galaxy. So they make these crazy paintings, and he's really cool. Now his sons. Well, I'll talk about it with him, because I want to get into the story. His father's also pretty
good. Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, what else should we talk about, guys?
I did want to point one thing out. First time being here, came over on the catamaran, and then everyone's in the lobby. And I don't think I've ever seen a convention or anything where so many people just started hugging each other. And like, it's like completely like, oh, I know they had a really good time. I know they had a really good time.
Yeah.
It was fantastic to see. So that's another great thing about it.
The other thing too is like when I picked the people for this year, like Kevin and David Prescott and Shane Mahan, you know, and people like that, I picked Burning Man people.
You know,
I pick people that get that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It really is.
Burning Man people. Well, it's good. And the beach is beautiful this year. Yeah. And we're the place we went to, what was it yesterday? The barbecue.
The barbecue.
That was so much fun.
That was fun. Gosh.
So yes,
Scott, did you have both the meat and the swordfish?
I did.
Oh good.
Yeah, Scott himself was grilling.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, so he was grilling and cooking up for everyone, and it was absolutely delicious. I had an amazing time. I always do, and I always just love just hanging out and talking to. And the thing is, especially things like that, you can just hop around from table to table and talk to different people, and I know all these people, and you know, some I just. There's no one here I don't like. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know? So it's really cool.
Yeah. Well, the concept is welcome home. You know,
right.
it's a place where, as we were talking earlier, there's really not an environment and a place on a global basis that where artists, digital artists who, you know, generally work in seclusion.
Yeah.
Right.
Very much.
Really feel like there's a worldwide community where they can share their joys, their successes, their failures, their trepidations, their issues. You know, it's really a purging of the creative spirit. And it's that's what we expect. We expect you to, you know, hear it in my talk tonight. It's we expect you to be transformed.
Yeah.
You come to this place and it's get ready to be transformed. And you don't, if you're a newbie, you don't get it. And when you leave, you are transformed. Mm-hmm. And you realize that you're part.
You kept your promise.
You're part of a culture that reminds you of the reason why you got in it in the first place.
That's yeah. very important.
And you know, also the other thing that's important is, and this has become sort of almost a sore subject with me, is I think that there has been a lack of respect for artists and specifically visual effects artists. And I've had this conversation with you before about it, but I think there's a lot of people out there, and this is not coming from the studios that are trying to push the, you know, et cetera, here and there. This is actually, I feel this is coming from a lack of information from the public, where people are saying, oh,
push the composite button.
Yeah, this is not a good movie because it's all done on computers. It's all CG. So if it's all CG, it's bad. And it's just such a misinformation.
Right.
And I hate that.
Well, it's a double whammy. On one hand, right, you don't get to write the movies, right?
Right.
And you get beat up because you're not the core creative.
Sure.
And therefore you're considered sort of like the ugly stepsister.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then when the movie doesn't succeed, it's because it's CG. So it's like you never get celebrated for the work that you do and recognized and compensated. And even when it's the work that you do, but it's not really your work, it's the guy who wrote it or directed or acted in
it,
then you get lambasted. You know,
And it was a thing that, you know, for example, the other thing is, if you do your job really well,
no one knows.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's
and so
a
it's like it's not. It's CG isn't bad. Bad CG is bad.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
And the thing is, okay, let's take a movie like, let's say, Jurassic Park, which did a huge success. But to me, I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest on this podcast. I hated that movie.
Didn't see it.
I hated it. It was
the
worst.
The new one.
The new one.
Jurassic World.
Yeah. Jurassic World. Jurassic Park was great. Fantastic. Right. Jurassic World, I hated because it had absolutely no story. I bonded with none of the characters. I didn't give a crap about those kids. You know, when they were sitting there talking about, I didn't see it.
I heard that the first part was, you know, the kids, no one cared about, you know.
Those are supposed to be the heroes. And they're like, and then suddenly like the kids are in the train, you know, they're trying to somehow interject some kind of a personality into them, which they clearly don't have. And they're like, the kids are like, somehow it's like, I saw mom and dad's email. They're talking to the lawyers. I looked it up. They're divorce lawyers. And they're like, that's the end of the story. It's like, I didn't even know they had parents. I don't even care.
That's because there was some studio executive who made a note and said, we need to care more about these kids. We don't understand them. Make them, their parents get divorced.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care. Exactly. It's like, and I know that was just sort of put in there for some arbitrary reason. But,
yeah.
But it was some of those things. Like, and everyone was saying, there was one of those videos that came out talked about Jurassic World looks worse than Jurassic Park, and it's all because of the CG. Huh. And I was like, I think the CG in Jurassic World is fantastic. It's the only reason to see the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was great because
look how much money it made, for God's sake.
You know, I got to see some of the dailies and the progression, and just to see, you know, the things that the artist cared about, you know, on a monthly basis leading up to the release, you could really see, you know, just from the details and to the actual dinosaurs, to, you know, what they wanted to do but couldn't quite do. It was really neat.
And, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, and so I have a great love for that. That's just one of those stories where I get it, you know.
Sure.
I just get it going in, and like I know what the first one represents to me. So something I'll probably watch, you know, when it comes out on home release, and just kind of enjoy it there. But yeah.
But you know, and that's an important point, especially as a visual effects artist. A lot of times, you may love a movie even though you know it's not a good movie, but you love the movie because you love the experience of working on it,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And some movies are very much like that. Like iRobot was okay. Was a pretty good movie,
it was okay.
But I loved working on that movie, right, because the team, it's the tribe again, right? The team was my tribe, and we bonded, and we had so many wonderful times doing that. And the same thing on Tron. Tron was like, you know, the story could use some work, but visually it was so exciting. And I loved working on that. And I loved the relationship we had with Eric Barba. That was the first time I got to really work with him and get to understand what he was going through. And then also talking to, Joe Kaczynski's first movie, and his background and my background are actually very similar. We both come from architecture school around the same time and started the CG thing. So it was, and I was just so passionate. I was like, I know what Joe wants. I understand his vision, and I would love to just make sure that I can deliver that. So the light bike sequence was like, that was my baby. I did that whole thing. Well, not me by myself. I had a team of people, but I was part of the leading people that were working on that. And I'm so proud of making sure those bikes look fantastic. The floor looked perfect. And this is like so simple. I have to make a black reflective floor. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of work to make that really pretty, you know?
It really does. I mean, the way that the blacks were actually crushed, mm-hmm, and then how they worked with the color. I mean, so much color theory went on in that. And even though that the colors and the lines and the motion, it all seemed like it should be there, which is the whole point, right?
Right.
But it's complicated to make all that.
And it's, you know, what's really hard was the fact that they're traveling on black reflective glass, and on a huge, massive space. And you have to be able to convey speed. There's no reference.
Right. Speed and scale.
Yeah.
Right.
Speed and scale. There's no reference. So it's really hard. It's
awesome. But I think it's interesting that you mentioned this stuff, and I'll take sort of a little bit of umbrage to it. Not umbrage to it. Joy in it. Is that culture is really critical to the work that you're doing. The culture that you're involved with. And I get back to THU. I think Andreas created a culture of what THU is all about. And at Digital Domain, we created a culture that to this day is still existing, you know?
Yeah.
And so there are places where you guys will work where the culture is not a culture, you know, that it's very, very corporate, and it's very, very structured. And then there are places where you'll work where
sometimes that's nice, but
yeah, sometimes it's nice, but it's also, it's nice to have some sort of structure,
sure,
but also to feel like you're doing something bigger than moving Casper's eyebrow.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely.
And that your team loves you, and that Kevin Mack comes in and says thank you, and you're not being beat up. And you know, it's bad enough you're already working 6 days a week, you know, 18 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a culture there that really embraces you and makes you feel that it's special and different, and it's more than, as George Lucas used to say, beer and pizza.
Right, it is more than beer and pizza. And I think that culture, here's the thing I was having about, you know, the popular press that's sort of bashing CG, is they don't have information, and they know nothing about our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the problem is there's got to be a way to get that spread, get people to understand it and appreciate it. Because there used to be a time when people like would be just unbelievably
blown away.
Like there were shows like Movie Magic, right?
Yeah.
And everyone, that was the first wave of people doing, that's what I want to do when I grow up, you know? And no one, I don't see, there's a lot of people out there that are saying that's what I'm doing when I grow up, and they're doing lots of CG education, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't look cool to a lot of people anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a shame, because it's such unbelievable talent. And you just have to walk around anywhere here and just talk to anyone and see their work. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I think, and the funny thing though, is that I think a lot of people actually, the CG, they don't see the CG as a problem at all. It's just one of those things where it's cool to blame it because it's the easiest thing. It's one of the first things.
Oh, they just all do it on a computer these days.
Yeah,
and I just hate that.
I mean, it's like you take a look at Transformers and the work, the massive work that goes into, you know, how that works on a visual level specifically.
Yeah.
And So then you'll have people who will go and they'll bash it for one reason or another, story, whatever the case may be. And then sometimes even on the CG. But to see how the pipeline comes to create all of these different parts that have to go together and all of it, I mean, it's amazing.
I'll give you a story. So this, I think this sort of encapsulates really what goes on. So 10 years ago, I'd go to Japan a lot, and I'm in an audience with a bunch of college kids, and they're studying digital media, and we're talking about through an interpreter, we're talking about movies that Digital Domain was working on or whatever, and their comments were almost always the same, which was, how long did that take? What software did you use? Mm-hmm. What was your compositor? What did you render in? What was the pipeline? Mm-hmm. What was the organizational structure to do the work? Mm-hmm. How long did it take? How many shots did you do in the amount of time? What mm-hmm. was the cost? So everything was process oriented.
Right, right, right.
And the reason everything was process oriented is because we have a language to discuss process, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
We don't really have a language, unless you're a special person, mm-hmm. to discuss creativity. So my response at times would say like, how long did that take? And my smart ass response would be, how long does it take to fall in love?
Right.
I've fallen in love in a second. Mm-hmm. It's taken me 10 years to fall in love.
Right.
How long does it take to fall in love? And they look at me like you're a brother from another planet.
Right.
And I am.
Yeah.
Right? So the problem is that whether you're a movie executive, a studio executive who's making a movie, they don't have a clue what a good movie is. Not a clue. Right? Right. And so what they do is they do know that if you look at the top 20 films of all time, 4 or 5 of them are computer generated animated films, and the other 15 are visual effects heavy laden movies.
Right.
So they're like, oh, we need a lot of visual effects, right? Similarly,
they're just using some matrix.
Yeah, that's right. Right. That's exactly right. And definitely. So I think from an audience member, and now some of the blowback that our industry is getting is they don't really understand why a movie is bad.
Right. Right?
But they know it's a bad movie. And so what can they blame?
Right.
They can't blame character arc because they don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. Right. They don't have the skills. They don't have the language, the vocabulary, the syntax to be able to discuss why George Clooney in Gravity was a stupid moron. They don't get it. Right. Right. So what they're going to do is I'll point to visual effects and they'll say, oh, well, there's so much damn CG in the movie. It's terrible. That's one thing.
Right.
And then they also don't understand what good CG is, as you said, because if it's good, they don't see it.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. They don't know, and it's a real pain. And the other thing, the other arguments that frustrate me is like, oh, it was so much better when they were doing it in miniatures. And it's like, no, I love miniatures. I'm not knocking miniatures. And I think they definitely have a place and they have a look and everything else. But the person making the miniatures, like the guy who's building the buildings in the computer is building them.
Right.
He's still making those buildings.
That's right.
He's still, it just doesn't happen to be with, cardboard and a X-Acto knife or whatever.
Right.
He's still making it with the tools that are out there, and it's unbelievable.
And by the way, the tools are very similar to what the tools are in the old school way.
But you can go unbelievably detailed.
That's right.
That's right. That's right.
Now, there are advantages, having made both steps, right? Had one foot in the optical miniature world and stuff because I'm that old. is that as an actor, right? To be able to respond to something, it's a lot easier to respond to a puppet or an animatronic device than it is to respond to nothing.
Right.
Right. So actors generally like certain things to be in their field and be real.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there are rendering issues, right? So there are certain things that if in the right hands of great lighting and shading people and with appropriate lookup tables and whatnot, look realistic. But the skill set to be able to do that is so few and far between that a lot of men and women that are involved in lighting and shading and rendering, et cetera, don't have.
No.
The tools are there, but the skill sets are not.
No.
And they blow it.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. So there's a lot of really bad V-Ray renderers, that's trust right. me.
There's another thing.
Having
that,
nothing
though.
To do with V-Ray.
No, of course, because the fact is, and it's just the same thing. I always use the same story. It's like I can give, and I'm sorry to my dad, but I always use him as an example. I said, I can give my dad a Leica camera. Doesn't mean he's going to make amazing pictures with
right,
it. You know?
That's right.
Yeah, that's true. There's another thing too. I mean, we're coming into a time now where it used to be, I don't know, it's kind of weird, and you guys can tell me, but you know, there was a point where CG was a little bit more celebrated at first because it was kind of this very new thing, and people were a little bit more willing on the director's side to incorporate it and be like, you know, I don't really understand this, so like, let's really engage and talk about it. And then that pushed away to like, hey, you know, I don't want to see this element on the set right now. I don't have time to deal with it, and the DPs don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff, right? And now you're coming into a new kind of wave where you have these directors like Kaczynski, for instance, right? Like, so what was that one he did with Cruise?
I was on that one too, Oblivion.
Okay, so perfect example, right? Now, didn't they have the walls where they actually projected like
yes,
the time
and you know
day,
why they did that?
So that the actors could like really feel that,
no,
right?
No, it was what? More than that. We actually experimented, and we were talking to Claudia, the DP on this, right? Uh-huh. And they were going to put it all green screen back there, but the whole, it's a Joe Kaczynski world, so it's shiny everywhere.
Yeah.
So imagine the amount of green spill
if
we
true,
did that. Huh? So we, and this is digital domain, we mocked up specifically the set and what it would be in green screen and rendered it to show them what a nightmare it'll be as a
great
set.
Idea.
And then so we did the rendering to not do the work.
Right.
That's awesome. That's actually really
so
great.
We did the rendering to show them that it would not be done, and so we came up with a whole other system, and it was beautiful. And
it
of course I met Tom actually when we were doing some stuff with him for do his DigiDouble stuff, and he was saying it was one of the most beautiful experiences to be on this set. It was like, wow, change the weather.
Yeah.
Wow. And then he would just be, and it was, yes, it was done for real, and yeah, that should be celebrated. But it was, we worked with the DP to make that decision. It wasn't like, we're not going to do it in CG. It just wasn't practical.
Right. And but that's what I'm saying is like, I think, you know, when you have those decisions and everyone's really listening to each other on that level, especially with the director who really starts to get that, mm-hmm, there's that perfect blend of practical and CG, because CG is not going to go away. It's around. It's going to be around. There's great, great, great treasure in it. So when you find that perfect blend, it makes everything great. And I think, mm-hmm, you're starting to get directors that really understand bringing that process in now.
Well, they grew up with it.
They grew up with it.
I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, I remember a time, again, excuse me,
yeah,
the old man in the sea. Yeah. But, you know, way back when, the director's approach back in the mid-80s, right, was basically, I know nothing about visual effects, and it scares the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys, and now we were at ILM, you guys do what you do, and I trust you,
yeah,
right? Then there were the directors that were like, because I'm the director, I need to make believe I know a lot about visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna be on your ass every single day,
mm-hmm,
and I'm gonna make you do things that you're gonna like curl up and wanna vomit, mm-hmm, because you know it's not going to work, but you can't tell the guy, mm-hmm, it's not going to work because, after all, he's the director, right?
Yeah.
And then there are people where they know enough to get you in trouble.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And then there was Jim Cameron,
mm-hmm,
and he, or Dave Fincher.
Right.
And those guys actually knew, and they were the only guys I really, yeah, work with that actually knew almost what you knew.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? And so that was either an enjoyable experience or a difficult experience, but at least you could speak a common language,
right?
Right. the best ones for us always was the director like Ron Howard, who says, hey, listen, I'm comfortable in who I am. I'm Ron Howard. I'm going to make a movie. I love you, Rob Legato. I love Digital Domain. Just do what you do and make it look like Marty Scorsese shot it. Mm-hmm. Right?
There you go.
And that was it. And then Rob went to the races. And, you know, I think the Apollo liftoff is one of the great liftoff, you know, it's great sequences of all time.
Yeah.
And Ron just trusted him.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
But nowadays, because of the age of directors, many of the directors grew up at a time where this was very much part of their syntax.
I did a podcast last week or 2 weeks ago with Wes Ball, who's the director of The Maze Runner.
Yeah.
Well, he's a lightwave guy.
Yeah.
So he spent most of his time. In fact, he did the title sequence and the last shot on the movie himself.
There you go.
That's awesome. That's right.
So you know, and he understands this. And you know what? Here's an interesting thing, Scott. Because he knows CG, I said, is this an advantage? He's like, oh, I think it's a huge advantage because I can communicate, but it's a disadvantage because sometimes I know enough, but I don't know everything that I can't think of a way that it could be done. And so therefore I say, let's not do that because I don't think I can do it. Someone is probably could come up with a better solution. That's so you have to be a little more free about it.
That's right. That's very true, actually. Yeah. I mean, we run into that a lot.
Really?
Actually, yeah, a lot. And that's why on our teams, we usually have one senior, kind of like a rock star guy. And then we have two completely fresh. Most of the time we'll have two completely fresh guys because the trade-off is great because there'll be something in the pipeline where one person, usually the most experienced, will say, no, you know, I don't want to do it this way because we can't, you know, they've run into problems. And then you'll have the two younger guys who will see ways past those problems. But then on the way to doing that, they'll run into an issue or not thinking about things that someone who's experienced in the pipeline is going to see coming, a million miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just this really nice give and take. Mm-hmm. And they hate each other at first, then they warm up, then they hate each other during crunch, and then everyone's best friends. So
Fincher's the best of that. I think Fincher fully understands visual effects.
And on top of that, he's also been very loyal to a lot of people he works with. So once he works, you know, him and Eric are like very close on that stuff. And once they knew that, they're like, and now Eric would say, he's like, no, let's look at this. It's like, that's too much pink in there. David can smell that from the parking lot.
Right.
So he knows exactly what David wanted, you know? So Well, it's cool, guys. We're pretty close to an hour on this podcast. Is there anything else you guys want to add before we do stuff?
We'll go ahead and give you the.
I'd like to add something.
Okay.
You know, it's THU is critical, I think, to the industry. It's created, massive amounts of enjoyment.
Yeah,
at least to two of us.
And relationships.
At the end of this, the third one. Andre is really seriously contemplating the fact that this is the last one. I say that with a really heavy heart because it means so much to all of us. But it's really taken its toll on him. It's taken its toll on him, not only in terms of time and energy and the like, but financially. I do this gratis for free because I love it. He's got a full-time job doing this, and he does it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And every year winds up in the hole and winds up financing $100,000, $95,000 a year on a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's at a point where I don't think he can continue to do it. And he's sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. And the rock is that for THU to be as successful as it is, it needs to be contained, right?
Right.
And so given the kind of service and the kinds of things that the THU staff want to do, the budget far outstrips the admissions, right?
Right.
And then there's the issue of corporate sponsors. Mm-hmm. Well, to find a Lenovo and a V-Ray and people like that with that mindset is very hard to do. So, you could appeal to the bigger corporate giants of the world. They just don't think the way you guys think. Mm. So the sponsorship opportunities are somewhat limited. And then there's THU TV, and that's the big experiment this year.
Right.
And if THU TV works.
I got an email from someone saying, he says, oh, thanks for the information. By the way, I'm getting THU TV, so I'll see you there.
Great. So if THU TV works, and by the way, For it to really work, we need about 1,500 to 2,000 attendees via THU TV.
Right.
And we're not there.
Yeah.
Right? So, because the expense of putting on THU TV was a major gamble on Andre's part.
Right.
It's literally roll the dice, red 21.
Right.
So, if THU takes off, I think I can go back, or even breaks even, or mm-hmm. shows the promise that it could continue on.
Right.
I'll have the ability to go back to Andre and say, come on, man, one more year. Let's try to make it work one more year.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't work, I think Andre is going to take his you know, game and go home.
Okay.
There's one more this way I
really
think it could
very
work.
Heavy, heavy.
Very heavy. Heavy.
Yeah.
There's one more way I think that it could work. And that way, and by the way, I'm open to suggestions.
This is probably going to be the first time I cry to you.
Yeah. And the other way that I think it could work, and as I, you know, I put my sort of strategy marketing hat on,
mm-hmm.
and I look at the world and I say, okay, Sigrep's got North America covered, right? Mm-hmm. Sigrep's sort of got Japan, Asia covered.
But that's
right?
even getting small.
It mm-hmm. is.
Yeah.
FMX sort of has
European
and Annecy and stuff. So there are two parts of the world that are not being addressed, in my opinion. One is South America,
mm-hmm.
and one is Australasia,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work being done out of Australia. There's a lot of work being done in Singapore and in Thailand and mm-hmm. things like that. And then there's a lot of work starting to be done in Brazil and Argentina.
Oh, huge.
So I thought, you got to find the perfect location, right? Mm-hmm. Because as we talked earlier, it's got to be in a place where it's not in a central city, and it's got to be a place where people want to go, and mm-hmm. it's got to be a place where we can keep them in. We
right.
don't want to let them out, right?
It's a small closed off paradise.
Right.
Yeah, it
is. So my thought is we did a little bit of, you know, sort of searching, and there might be a place in Singapore or in Bali,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm.
And there might be a place in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and if we could get the interest of those countries and people in those areas that say, yeah, we're prepared to do it, I think then if you have a THU Brazil and a THU Bali, let's say, we'll be able to do it by scope and size.
Mm.
So right now it's looking for sponsors who be able to fit the format of what you guys, Lenovo and VR, are like,
mm-hmm.
and be able to make investments into it and see the value. THU TV, getting more people to view it and buy virtual tickets, and then possibly expanding it to two different other cities around the world, I think we have a chance. And then I have to go back and fall on my knife and bleed all over Andre and say, come on, let's do it, because he needs the support to be able to get it done. But
I also think that, you know, I don't know, I just don't see how the community won't respond. You know, there's people okay. here that are so loyal to it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the whole event got sold out months and months and months before
right.
it came in, I think the community is going to respond. I just don't see a way how so. That's not going to happen. I know we're still at the beginning of the conference, and this will come out after when it's announced, but I just think the community is going to respond. And I'm sure that companies like Lenovo and Chaos Group will probably look at this as an opportunity for us to build a community again. I think that's the other way we have to work at it, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Like somebody like Chaos Group, for example, you have somewhat limited resources.
We're a rendering engine.
Yeah, you're not
No, but okay, we may have limited resources in some way, but we also have a lot of influence, right, in the industry.
We have
a huge outreach. We have a big social media scene.
But if you think about that,
and this podcast is an example, is
the only way to do that without it. So there are three levers, right?
Right.
Lever one is other cities, because we've got to keep it small. Lever two is corporate sponsors who put in the big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And lever three is THU TV.
Right.
Right. So people like you guys could probably impact THU TV because you have such a large reach.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to be able to sort of get more corporate sponsorship, I don't think.
No, right? But we could make the other corporations understand better.
I think the outreach is important to having access to this direct market. So that's where Chaos Group comes in really, really well. And then once you have those numbers that you can outreach to, you go and you show maybe a superstar, and then that superstar agrees, depends on, you know, not even in the VFX field, but just in general. And then you have your Intels, you know, your Lenovos, your other manufacturers who would most likely come along for the ride. So I think it's an important thing to let people know that if they really want this through channels like what Chaos Group is doing here, mm-hmm. If they want it, they really need to be vocal about it. And then that will let things fall into place.
Right.
You know, because the corporations don't know. Speaking from Lenovo, Lenovo has this great hardware that no one really knows about because we've never really
in this space
right.
That no one really knows about because we didn't know that, you know, it was good for this space.
But if you go out there and you think about the other possible large corporate sponsors, right? So mm-hmm. Adobe,
mm-hmm.
right? Blackmagic,
right?
Mm-hmm. IBM Corporation, mm-hmm. Apple. You know, you start to think about they're so corporate. And their sensibilities. They want to know, what's my booth? Can I have my guys there? Can I sell this stuff? Can I, you know?
Well, they want to return on investment, right?
Right.
They want
to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
but they don't understand that the return on investment is so much bigger than actually getting to sell a unit while you're there, because the imprint that you make is so much
huge.
Legitimate.
Well, you know, I mean, this podcast is an example, right?
Right.
So we go to a lot of events and we do a lot of stuff. And I've wanted to do this podcast for a long time, just for my own curiosity, like what it's like to make a podcast and put it out there. Well, it's suddenly grown quite a bit. Like
right.
I said, I'm getting like between 7,000 and 10,000 listeners a week. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good for this industry to do that.
Right? Yeah.
And so let's go to SIGGRAPH. SIGGRAPH is a wonderful thing. I love it. It's a great place to FaceTime, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But, you know, I probably run into about 600-700 people that I could really connect to. So I have ability with this podcast to reach out to more people and to share what this community is about. So even though we're limited in this little area and we have
Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope.
I want to do that. I think that, like, I believe that what we can do as a community, we can put the message out there.
Yep.
And I'd love to make the message out there. And I'll figure something out, Scott. I don't know what I can do, but I'll figure what I'll contribute to make help this happen.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think really, honestly, just anyone listening to this, you know, first thing is, if you really do care about something like THU,
buy a THU TV ticket.
That'd be the first thing. But
get on the internet and get the virtual ticket. Because, as I said, we sell 1,500, 2,000 tickets. I feel fairly confident I can convince Andre that, you know.
Now, will they be able to buy the ticket after THU is over?
You can buy it all the time.
Okay, all right. Because it's all pre-recorded.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, good. We'll put that link up on here as well.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Guys.
All right.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much.
Love. All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye.